5 o'clock. Good afternoon. You're with Taylor Ralph and Athena Zellandoni for today's top stories. A Brisbane court has upheld activists' right to march for protests after the LNP attempted to refuse authorisation. Queensland Chief Magistrate Terry Gardiner refused the council's bid to block the protest from occurring, arguing the activists were being reasonable in a democratic society. Brisbane Greens councillor Jonathan Sree, who organised the protest, says the claims of major disturbance from the council could be mitigated. The protest is set to take place this Wednesday for 15 minutes between Queen Street Mall and the State Parliament.
Controversial trade union leader John Setka has lost his bid in the Supreme Court of Victoria to stop his expulsion from the Labor Party. Mr. Setka applied for an injunction to block the vote, arguing the decision should fall to the Victorian branch of the party. Labor leader Anthony Albanese called for Setka to be removed due to concerns raised by his reported comments about anti-family violence campaigner Rosie Batty.
Australians could face up to 2 years in jail and a potential fine of up to $25,000 for cash transactions made over the $10,000 limit. The measure was originally announced by the Turnbull government in the 2018 federal budget as a way of fighting back the economy. Turnbull argued the proposed ban would help eliminate tax evasion and money laundering.
Australia's mortality rate for unintentional opioid overdose has grown in recent years, according to a study released today by the Pennington Institute. The annual overdose report stated there were more than 1,600 unintentional overdose deaths in 2017, compared to just over 900 deaths in 2002.
Wages in Queensland have fallen, with the average worker taking home less than at Christmas last year. Athena Zellandoni reports.
New data released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics shows Queensland is the only state in Australia where wages have gone backwards. In the 6 months leading to May this year, average weekly earnings dropped by nearly $16. All other states reported wage increases over the same period. Acting General Secretary for the Queensland Council of Unions, Michael Clifford, says the data reflects the effect of penalty rate cuts alongside an increase in insecure work.
We've been calling on the federal government in particular to address the issue of casualisation so that people can have more certainty. If they've got more certainty, they're going to be able to plan their lives. But while we've got increasing casualisation, we're going to see these problems continue.
This is the first time wages have fallen in the Sunshine State since data collection began in 2012. Spokesman for the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in Queensland, Dan Petrie, says any government response should be federal as well as state.
What we need to see is a far greater level of integration and indeed cooperation between all levels of government to start delivering for the many businesses, not just in southeast Queensland, but of course in the regions, and to really deliver on the great potential this state has.
Queensland's unemployment rate sits at 6.4%, with only South Australia recording higher unemployment. Athena Zellandoni for The Source News.
Noise from Brisbane's new runway is creating stress for Brisbane residents. Emily Lowe reports.
It's the sound less southeast residents will hear over their homes when Brisbane's new runway opens next year. The new parallel runway will reduce air traffic but significantly changes the flight paths over Brisbane. Bulimba, Balmoral and Hawthorne are some of the unlucky suburbs affected by the change. They will hear up to 70 departing aircraft each day between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. And it's not just an annoying noise. The flight paths will affect the housing market, which worries homeowners like Steve Nelson.
Well, I've got an investment property on the hill at Hawthorne, and with the new flight path being to the west of the current direction of the runway, it's going to go over the top of my investment property, which will have a negative effect on my property value in the longer term.
Annerley, Rocklea, Buranda and Stones Corner will also experience more flight noise, with up to 50 arrivals flying over those suburbs each day. It's a win for many who live under the current routes, as the new flight path avoids Carindale, Carina, Seven Hills and Greenslopes. Greenslopes resident Sally Cohen is excited that her neighbourhood will be a little quieter.
They would come over at night time and it would be quite loud. I sympathise with those people who have to have the noise of the aircraft going over their homes. I know exactly what it's like.
In a statement, the Brisbane Airport says the runway will make travel times quicker and more effective for passengers as international visits to Brisbane continue to soar.
That was Emily Lowe with that report.
Virgin Airlines has become the first airline in Australia to ban Apple MacBooks from check-in baggage. This decision comes after Apple recalled several older generation 15-inch MacBook Pro laptops due to unsafe batteries. Lily Hurst reports.
Taylor Ralph, a frequent Virgin flyer and MacBook owner, says the airline should lift its strict 7-kilo carry-on luggage restriction to accommodate MacBook users, who are now forced to take their laptops on the plane.
I definitely see Virgin's logic behind the move. However, they do have a very strict 7-kilo carry-on weight limit, and I think it's unfair on their behalf that they don't lift that 7-kilo limit.
In June, Apple replaced more than 400,000 laptop batteries globally over concerns that they may overheat and catch on fire. However, Patrick G, manager of Mac and PC Doctors Brisbane, says the problem has not affected the majority of his customers.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but we haven't had, like, lots of people bring their Macs in with this issue.
The Apple laptop ban came shortly after the user White Panda on social news aggregation site Reddit reported his MacBook started to smoke after he plugged it in. Apple says it has received 26 reports of MacBook Pro laptop batteries overheating, with 5 owners reporting minor burns and 1 suffering smoke inhalation. In a statement, Virgin said staff found it difficult to differentiate between the safe and banned models of the laptop, so a general ban was enforced. For The Source News, I'm Lily Hurst.
The federal Labor opposition plans to stop low-scoring students from becoming teachers. Madison Gillis reports.
Opposition education spokeswoman Tanya Plibersek vows to restrict entry to education degrees to the top 30% of school leavers. Australian universities have been found to allow students into teaching courses with ATAR scores below 20. Ms. Plibersek is also calling for campuses to stop lowering entry scores and set the minimum at 80. University of Sunshine Coast Bachelor of Education and Arts student Jordan Martin says restricting entry will encourage high-achieving students to enter teaching and change people's perceptions of the career path.
I think it can only as a result raise the standard of students who are going to be let into these education degrees. It also might change the perception people have of the high school teaching profession, in that perhaps there's a perception at the moment that high school teaching is maybe a backup job or something that it's not seen as a viable first option, where that's definitely not the case. And raising the standard might change that perception and might encourage more high-achieving students to go for it.
However, Griffith University Deputy Head of School of Education and Professional Studies, Professor Beryl Exley, says teacher quality cannot be reduced to just ATAR scores.
What we're really focusing on is the exit quality. And the Australian Institute of Teaching and School Leadership has rolled out a very extensive accreditation program that ensures that there is both consistency and compliance around those program standards and professional standards for candidates who are exiting their teaching degree and entering the teaching profession.
Doggy daycares are the newest targets of ruthless dog baiting. Caitlin Oliver reports.
Dog parks weren't enough for baiting culprits, with doggy daycare centres now in their sights. 8 dogs have died in recent weeks as a result of baits planted in New Farm, Newstead and Tenerife. Employees at Retreat Doggy Daycare in Barden discovered rat bait by their front gate on Monday. Business owner Gabrielle Rundle Teely says luckily the bait was found before any dogs were harmed.
There has been a lot in the surrounding areas that we've been aware of, mainly just dog park, the odd just on a sidewalk somewhere, but to my knowledge, we're the first dog-related business in Brisbane that's been targeted, but really it was kind of a matter of time as to when it was going to happen.
This epidemic is on the rise in Brisbane, with multiple public locations hit as well as accredited facilities. Local dog owner Talia Newton says the recent events have limited her dog's freedom as she is scared to let her off the leash.
Stay with her, like she's still in our eyesight, and watch out for anyone else. You know, if we haven't seen somebody at that dog park before, like if they're not like a regular or a local or something, yeah, keep a closer eye on them.
Recent dog deaths have prompted the police and Brisbane City Council to take action, with Lord Mayor Adrian Schreiner promising covert cameras to be installed in off-leash dog parks. Mr. Schreiner asks residents to keep their eyes open for anything suspicious and urges owners to ensure their dog is not eating anything from the ground. Caitlin Oliver for The Source News.
Caitlin spoke to Retreat Doggy Daycare owner about what a shock it has been to find the baits at their centre.
Personally, haven't been targeted prior to this. Obviously, there has been a lot in the surrounding areas that we've been aware of, mainly just dog parks. the odd just on a sidewalk somewhere, but to my knowledge, we're the first dog-related business in Brisbane that's been targeted. But really, it was kind of a matter of time as to when it was going to happen.
Could you just explain to me what the bait looked like? And was it clear to you guys that it was bait at first, or did you have to think about it, or like what sort of measures did you take?
Absolutely. So every day anyway, we check the backyard and any area that the dogs are in for anything that's slightly odd. This one, you could not have missed it whatsoever. It was right at the front gate where everyone walks through. It was bright red, so I wasn't immediately aware that it was a rat bait because usually they're green. But if you Google red rat bait, it was the first thing that comes up. So it was essentially just like a big chunk of red bait, and then there were a few smaller bits around it that had been crumbled off.
Yep, so obviously that's a big thing for a doggy daycare. What sort of like impacts has this had on your business, and have people been worried, or your current clients, have they been worried about it? Or
everyone, I know everyone in the community and our clients have been worried about just taking their dogs out walking. Our clients have been excellent. They haven't stopped coming here. We do check our yards constantly before the dogs are let out into them, so there's very little risk of anything happening here, but it's, you just have to remain vigilant.
Yeah. So you mentioned about how you check everything before the dogs go out and everything like that. Is there any other precautionary measures that you guys take, or that you encourage other dog owners and stuff to take as well?
Definitely just encourage your dog to not eat anything that you don't know what it is. Even some of the toys now in dog parks have been targeted with poison. So just don't let your dogs use anything that you haven't had in your possession the whole time, really. We here have put up extra cameras in any area that's publicly accessible just to be doubly sure. But really, you just have to be careful.
Yeah, that's the only way, I guess. And I saw in an article that the City Council, Brisbane City Council, had helped you guys out with the incident. Have they been real vigilant in helping you and doing as much as they can?
Council has been great. They can't do a whole lot, obviously, given they are not the police. So they were really helpful in getting it all cleaned up and just double-checking that the area was secure again. And then it's with the police now as to whether we can track down someone that's responsible for it.
Since 65.2% of Queensland became drought-declared, demand for non-nitrogen-based fertilisers has steadily increased. A case study from Chemlinks states imports of phosphate have increased around 14%, as Alexandra Pitcher reports.
Phosphate rock has been an integral part of agricultural development in Australia, as it is a crucial ingredient in fertiliser. The Republic of Nauru, which is known for its high quality of phosphate, has relied on Australia as one of its main markets. Because of that demand, combined with depleted reserves of phosphate in Nauru, Nauru's phosphate supplier Ronfos has been overwhelmed. Zilla Takei, a Nauruan national with 13 years' experience with Ronfos, says the company is relying on exhausted provisions of phosphate to meet quotas. She said,
"Strip mining has completely devastated the land, ecology, and environment of the Nauru land mass."
She said, "Strip mining creates cavities in surface land that causes long-term detriments in the environment and surrounding area. Despite increasing strain on existing phosphate reserves, there are no immediate plans of stopping excavation."
"We're trying to get as much as we can."
The demand for phosphate continues to increase annually by 2%, despite the main source of phosphate being 80% mined out, Alexandra Pitcher reports.
The Weather Bureau is predicting rain throughout drought-ravaged southeast Queensland tonight. Harley Lewis reports.
The Bureau of Meteorology is predicting a 50 to 75% chance of rain in the Southern Downs tonight. This storm is arriving out of a dry winter, with regional Queensland towns like Stanthorpe having only received 34 millimetres of rain over the last 3 months. Bureau of Meteorology meteorologist Harry Clark says,
well, look, it's getting towards that time of year where we start to see our first storms appear. We're, you know, only a week out from spring. So, look, it's fairly usual timing, really, to start seeing the development of some showers and storms through southern parts of Queensland, and I guess it's a sign that spring's approaching.
Despite the highly anticipated rain, the storms are not large enough to provide lasting relief to regional towns suffering drought. The storm is also expected to hit the town of Warwick, providing the first significant rainfall ending an unprecedented 72-day dry spell. Mayor Tracy Doby says,
even a little bit of rain will do a lot to assist people's mental health. As you said, 72 days without rain is a long time in our region.
Stanthorpe is expected to receive between 5 to 15 millimetres of rain. The storms are predicted to occur intermittently over the next 2 days. This has been Holly Lewis from The Source News.
The drought in southeast Queensland is putting pressure on producers in the southern Downs regions. Max Williamson reports.
The Downs region in southeast Queensland is experiencing a record drought, with the area not having rainfall in more than 70 days. The previous record for time without rain in Warwick was 58 days in 2017. Warwick local Ryan Young says it's tough seeing the toll the drought is taking on his animals and livestock.
Definitely. Without water, we can't feed our stock or grow sustainable crop. The option of purchasing water through irrigation is there, but not everyone can afford that. It's pretty expensive.
Water restrictions have been put in place for most of southeast Queensland, with Warwick setting extreme restrictions such as no drinking water to be used at public parks and playing fields. Fines are being issued for residential households using more than 800 litres of water a day. Mr. Young says the water restrictions are splitting the community.
It's been pretty divided. A lot of people understand that it is a necessity, but a lot are pretty up in arms just because it's an inconvenience, really.
AgForce is starting a movement to increase awareness for rural areas affected by the drought. President Georgie Somerset says AgForce will continue its support for families and communities facing water shortages, lack of connectivity, and poor roads. Weather Bureau predictions of rain are bringing hope of a break to the 70-day dry spell in the next couple of days. Max Williamson, Source News.
Winemakers in Stanthorpe remain unaffected despite the continued drought. Michelle Honsenbat reports.
Drought-stricken Stanthorpe is expected to run out of water just in time for Christmas. With water restrictions at 100 litres a day, the cost to truck up fresh water is estimated at more than $1 million. As drought continues to spread over southeast Queensland, winemakers are urging customers to continue to visit. Resident winemaker from Ridgemill Estate, Peter McGlashan, says that he would like the community to know that they are still open for business.
We're still open for business. You know, we still want people to come to our region, to our area, and see what we do and how exciting the place is. Don't stop coming because we're in drought. Keep coming, keep supporting us, and we'll make it through.
President of the Queensland Wine Industry Association, Michael Hayes, says that the wine industry will ensure that it prevails.
80% of the industry in Queensland comes from Stanthorpe, so if we're down 80%, we're down a significant amount for the Queensland wine industry coming into the 2020 harvest, and it's flowed right onto all areas, in particular around Stanthorpe. Dire effects on the businesses in and around Stanthorpe.
Under these conditions, inadequate water resources are likely to halt wine production in Granite Belt. Michelle Homsenbat, The Source News.
Hong Kong police officers have pulled their guns, with one firing a warning shot with a live round after Hong Kong protesters attacked them with sticks and rods. Iris Sang reports.
On August 25th, police fired water cannon and tear gas after some protesters threw Molotov cocktails and bricks. Other tore up smart lamp posts equipped with surveillance cameras during a street protest in Hong Kong. Activists say they were fighting the erosions of the one country, two systems arrangement, and the demonstrations have lasted about 3 months. Federation University's sociology lecturer Naaman Smith says Hong Kong protesters have used public spaces such as streets, digital spaces and co-opting spaces to make their voice heard.
So any public space can be effective for protesters.
What's most interesting about the Hong Kong protesters is that they are taking spaces which aren't typically considered to be in the public domain, like airports and roads, and turning them into spaces for protest. So what this shows us is that public space is anywhere people congregate en masse, and even spaces that we don't expect to become public can become public given the right amount of people.
Iris Zhang for the Source News.
And in sport, last chance training for Queensland quad bike representatives has taken place at Queensland Moto Park ahead of the ATV MX National Championships this weekend. Taylor Ralph reports.
13 elite quad bike racers from the age of 8 to 30 will represent Queensland this weekend at the Australian Quad Bike National Championships in Canberra. This is the largest number of Queensland representatives the championship has seen at a national level, compared to last year when only one Queenslander took part. President of the Scenic Motorsports Club, Shannon Wright, started the club only 18 months ago with just two junior competitors. The club has since evolved into the largest running independent quad bike organisation in the state, with more than 100 active members.
We've realised that your club's only as strong as the weakest link, and we're all here to support the weakest link and build them up as well. It's all about confidence and having fun. If they're having fun, we're enjoying it as well.
Mr Wright says the Scenic Rim Motorsports Club has the highest number of female quad bike competitors, making up 75% of their membership, and says this is only encouraging more females to take part in what was once a male-dominated sport. 12-year-old junior national competitor Mika Wright started racing quad bikes at just 5 years of age after seeing her older sister compete in the sport. Miss Wright, who was the sole competitor in the national championship last year, says she is excited to have so many competitors join her this year and is hopeful to come away with a win in her class.
I'm hoping that I could come away with a trophy, but other than that, it's just have fun.
With the all-terrain vehicle championship only being held once a year, more than 100 of the best quad bike racers will take part in the event. Taylor Ralph for The Source News. High-flying action is expected this weekend as Gold Coast Rollers secure spots in the Queensland Basketball League Grand Final for their men's and their women's teams. The men face the Brisbane City Capitals in Auchenflower Stadium, while the women are up against the South District Spartans at Roland Cohen Stadium in Carina. Thomas Carew reports.
The Gold Coast women went through a grueling semi-final against Townsville earlier this month, winning by only 1 point in overtime. That's the kind of pressure Gold Coast roller Jackie Luna Castro, who plays for the Mexico national team, thrives under.
I like the pressure. It's fun. I think that's a big part of what I like about the game. We have the type of team over here that it doesn't matter who's on and who's off. They also have a really great team, but I think I've known Leah Scott for a few years. She's a really good player. She's really developed over the years, so she's going to be a big threat. But then Aja, I mean, she is tough to guard. She plays so hard all the time.
Meanwhile, the men's rollers are facing the unassailable Brisbane City Capitals, led by Jason Cadee. Cadee played his first season for the QBL team this year after a successful season with the Bullets.
We've really played some good basketball throughout this whole season, and we've been, I guess, underrated the whole year too. I always hear people talking about every other team but us. So for us, it's just about ourselves, like it has been all year. We treat it like another game.
Cadee was recently selected to play with the Boomers in the FIBA World Cup after Ben Simmons pulled out of the roster.
But it's just such a different world when you play international basketball. It doesn't matter who you play against. Even if you win by 30 or 40, it feels like you played the hardest team ever sometimes when you play those games. I laughed at that when people started reporting it as that. I wasn't his replacement at all. He just pulled out and there was a spot available and they need another ball handler.
Both finals start this Friday at 7 p.m. in a best of three contests that will continue over the weekend.
The Coorparoo Kings have overcome the outsiders tag to prevail over the Bond University Bullsharks in the Queensland Women's AFL Final on Sunday. The Kings won by 76 points against Bond at Yeronga after a 6-0 first quarter in favour of Coorparoo. Dan Kelly reports.
After two grand final losses over the last two seasons, the Coorparoo Kings have rebounded to taste victory in the 2019 Queensland Women's AFL Grand Final. The Kings defined the odds to make the grand final after finishing fourth in the regular season. However, a near-perfect finals run culminated in defending the minor premiers Bond University in the final. The experienced trio of Paige Parker, Sally Young and Emma Zilke led the Kings all afternoon long. For Kings captain Sally Young, the gamut was a moment to saviour.
The crowd were amazing. Everyone came in together. Everyone was so happy. I just felt really proud.
For Bond University star Lauren Bella, the day was bittersweet, with the Gold Coast Suns player playing in her first QAFL-W Grand Final. Despite the result, the development of Bella throughout the season led to the Suns signing the ruckman for the 2019 season. The debut of the Suns in the women's AFL has seen a lot of attention during the off-season, with several Brisbane Lions players from 2018 moving down the M1 to the Suns for the 2019 season. Bella made the move from the Lions to the Gold Coast and says despite the Suns being in their infancy, they are to be feared in 2019.
We're a brand new team, so we've got a lot to prove, but at the same time, nothing. So we're going to come hard out the gates from the get-go.
With the level of women's football in Queensland at an all-time high and the addition of the Suns to the national competition, it is a great time to be a football fan in Queensland. Dan Kelly, Source News.
To weather now, and in Brisbane, it's partly cloudy and 23 degrees, getting down to a minimum of 14 overnight. Rain and scattered thunderstorms are expected over the next 2 days, but the sun will come out before the weekend. Winds in the Moreton Bay region are 11 kilometres an hour, with high tide expected at 7 p.m.
Renowned journalist Peter Grester is hosting an important discussion on press freedom at the Sydney Opera House on September the 1st, titled My Crime is Journalism. Nance Haxton spoke to the University of Queensland professor about his concerns for press freedom in Australia for her podcast, Streets of Your Town, The Journo Project.
From the Wandering Journo at Stories That Matter Studios, I'm Nance Haxton, and this is The Streets of Your Town, The Journo Project. This podcast is all about recognising great Australian journos, wherever they may be around the world. With the media in Australia under increasing attack and hard-won freedoms under threat, there's no better time to celebrate and highlight the work of the top journalists from down under. This journalist has had decades of experience as an international correspondent in countries from Afghanistan, Africa, and South America. But it was when he was imprisoned in an Egyptian jail for 400 days that his reporting became truly world-renowned. Peter Grester is now a champion of media freedom in Australia, calling for an urgent review of the many national security laws passed by federal parliament in recent years, saying they limit and even criminalise the legitimate work of journalists, with deeply damaging ramifications to the very foundations of our democracy. In this episode of Streets of Your Town, The Journo Project, he takes us behind the scenes of how he ended up in that Egyptian jail on what he describes as a run-of-the-mill story that he never expected could end in such incredible circumstances. We also hear the background to his illustrious career before and since, such as how he was awarded the prestigious internationally recognised Peabody Award for his documentary on Somalia.
Peter, thank you so much for joining the Streets of Your Town, The Journo Project.
It's fantastic to join you. It's really exciting.
Peter, here we are sitting in the sun in Brisbane at a cafe near your office at the University of Queensland. This must be quite a contrast to the life that you have led. You began as an integrally safe high school student. Were you thinking of journalism even back then?
Gosh, no, not really. And that's funny because that's just down the road here, not too far from where we're having our coffee. It is kind of coming home, and it was weird because I left Brisbane as fast as my little legs could carry me back. As soon as I finished high school and university, I was gone. I couldn't wait to get out of this town. It just felt a little bit too small and too parochial for me. I know a lot of Brisbaneites will probably come after me.
It
was a very different city, and you know, I'm also a very different person to the one that I was back then, that was desperately interested in the world, the larger world. But let's go back to Indooroopilly State High, where I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do. Really, I had not a clue. In fact, I remember, here in Queensland, we had the Queensland Tertiary Admission Centre, QTAC forms.
Thanks for listening to The Source News Live on 4EB Global Digital. You've been listening to Taylor Ralph and Athena Zalandoni. Have a good night.